CD 3.
In one interstellar gulf, a ship dropping out of elsewhere for repairs had discovered a paleotech. Dead, at least by human terms, though Kin Arad has pointed out that paleotechs probably lived by a different timescale and that this apparently lifeless hulk may have been very much alive if considered by slow, metagalactic time. It was a thin-walled tube half a million miles long. Wheeler legends spoke of a polished, smooth world where paleotechs had inscribed their history, which included the legend of the pre-paleotech Chthones, who spun giant stars out of galactic matter, and the Rhyme, who produced hydrogen as part of their biological process. This was the theory, that races arose and changed the universe to suit themselves and died. And then other races arose in the ruins, changed the universe to suit themselves, and died. And other races arose in the ruins, and arose, all the way back to the pre-totalic nothingness, continuously creating. There had never been any such thing as a natural universe. Kin once heard a speaker refer disparagingly to the spindles because they had manipulated worlds. She stood up and said, "So what? If they hadn't, Earth would still be a mess of hot rocks and heavy clouds. They changed all this, and they brought in a big moon, but do you know the best of all? They gave us a past. They jiggered their strata machines to give us fossils of things that had never existed. Ichthyosaurs and crinoids and chalk and ancient seas. Maybe they didn't feel at home unless they had a few hundred metres of fossil strata under them, like they couldn't feel happy if there was another spindle within 50 miles. But I think they did it because it was their art. They didn't know anyone would see it, but they went ahead and did it." Kin found a quiet moment to explore the weapons hold. If Marco had flown the ship to a world with a shaky government, there was enough stuff on board to equip a rebel army. There was what looked like a complete missile system, and several racks of small arms that J-Lo must have made to ancient patterns. One handgun fired sharp wooden bullets. Why? The ship, they never did get round to naming it, dropped into real space. Marco's hands hovered over the controls as he waited for a welcoming barrage. There was nothing. There wasn't even a star near the ship.
"We're still on the edge of explored space," said Marco. "That blue giant there is Dagdar Secundus. It's about half a light year away."
"Well, here we are, and where are we?" asked Kin. "A star like that shouldn't have planets, especially nice sunny ones."
"The computer is searching," said Marco gloomily. "Needle, haystack. Perhaps we'll find some ice ball whipping along at maybe 20 knots orbital velocity."
"Meanwhile, we could eat," suggested Silver.
They each dialed their meal from the dumbwaiter and wandered back into the control room. "Give it an hour," said Kin. "This area of space has been explored. What the hell can it find that the survey team's missed?"
"I doubt if they looked out there," said Silver.
There was a brief moment of nausea as the computer flicked the ship a few million miles for a parallax measurement.
"We followed J-Lo's course tape," said Marco. "I'd hate to have to..."
The computer chimed. Marco vaulted into the control chair and juggled the screen controls. At the limit of magnification, there was a small, fuzzy hemisphere. They looked at it blankly.
"Just a planet," said Kin.
"Rather brightly lit for this distance out," agreed Marco. "Highly polished ice."
Silver coughed apologetically.
"I am no astronomer," she said, "but surely it is wrong."
"Not ice," said Marco. "Could be helium-4, I suppose."
"You misunderstand me," said the Shand. "Surely the light hemisphere should be pointed towards the star."
They stared at it. Finally, Marco exclaimed,
"Bleeding hell, she's right."
He glanced down at the shouter screens.
"It's 500 million miles away," he said. "I should be able to make a straight line jump.
For a moment, four hands hovered like a flight of hawks over the controls and dropped. The sky.